Professor of History Mary E. Wisener Hanks reminds us that for anything you might want to claim about gender, there will always be a counterexample from somewhere in history and/or across the world today. So this morning, we will be discussing various ways that gender roles are performed in different religious and spiritual contexts. One of our first stories takes us to the 4,500-year-old Gala Priestex of Sumeria. These dedicants of the goddess Inanna could be male, female, or a transcendent third gender combining elements of both previous gender roles. In Sumerian tradition, the lamentation songs sung by these priestex in honor of Inanna were originally a feminine spiritual act. But amongst the Gala, this role was shared by everyone regardless of individual gender identity. In India, you will find communities of Hijra, people who were assigned male at birth but don't identify with being male. These people worship a Hindu mother goddess known as Bahukara Mata. Once seen as sacred, these Hijra communities are now highly stigmatized post-British colonization. In Islam, an imam is a leadership role used to describe someone who serves as a community leader, provides religious guidance, or leads Islamic prayer. While usually only men are imams, historically there is precedence for women to also function as imams, and there is actually no Quran verse that prohibits Muslim women from doing so. Many of you have likely heard the phrase two-spirit. This is a term coined by indigenous elder Myra Larrabee in 1990 to refer to a special third gender community and spiritual role that is present under different names in many different indigenous tribes in North America. It is important to remember that different tribes and nations all have their own views and roles based on gender, and I would encourage you to refer to the literature of the various indigenous communities themselves to learn more, as is appropriate, as these communities can absolutely speak for themselves. In my contemporary tradition of inclusive heathenry, also known as Germanic and Scandinavian paganism, you will find the term Gothar being used to refer to the spiritual leader of a given group of heathens who worship together. Gothar is the plural form of two Old Norse gendered terms, Githia and Gothi, which both refer to a pagan leader of spiritual significance. In our continuous attempt to decolonize our spirituality, my particular heathen group, known as Elk Ridge Kindred, uses the gender-neutral term Gothar to refer to our heathen priestex. By taking binary gender roles out of the description equation, the term Gothar could refer to a transgender, non-binary, or cisgendered person. I invite you to think about what examples of gender roles you remember seeing as a child in whatever religious tradition you were raised in. Do you believe the spiritual gender roles you were brought up with are healthy or inclusive? So, my sisters and I were raised in the Roman Catholic Church. I was a good Catholic from baptism up until confirmation, and there was even a period of time when I seriously considered becoming a nun. However, I definitely wasn't out as a bisexual person in my church, and I didn't yet have the verbiage to describe myself as I am, non-binary, when I was that age. So it would have been acceptable for me to participate in activities in my church as a female-presenting person up to a point. I would never be able to serve as a priest. That was reserved for males only. And my church at the time was still a little resistant to the idea of altar girls serving up on the podium so close to the sacred Eucharist. We had one or two women lecterns who were occasionally allowed to do the readings, and that was considered very post-Vatican II forward thinking. I remember as a young teen looking up the exact passage in the Catechism of the Catholic Church where it said, and I quote, "Only a baptized man validly receives sacred ordination." That moment, reading those words, sparked the beginning of my disenchantment with the Catholic Church. One of the absolutely bizarre dichotomies that I couldn't wrap my young brain around was that adjacent to our main church, we had a chapel dedicated to Mary, the mother of Jesus. Her role was to be venerated but not worshiped, as she was a mighty intercessor between us and God, and one of her titles was Empress of Hell due to her formidable power over the devil. Interestingly, this is like a little side rabbit hole, there are multiple historical accounts of Mary triumphantly banishing demons from her followers, including an instance from 1516 involving a 12-year-old girl from Essex, England named Jane Wentworth, who was delivered from a demonic possession by merely just visiting the Marian Shrine of Our Lady of Grace in Ipswich. She was subsequently then possessed by Mary herself and proceeded to give a mystical and visionary sermon to a crowd of onlookers, and that is historically documented. However, it was very important for everyone to remember that Mary was only powerful because of her absolute devotion and submission to God the Father. See that patriarchy not so subtly creeping in? We Catholics couldn't let those divine women get too close to the concept of sovereignty. I have always been fascinated and entranced by the Virgin Mary, and even now as a practicing pagan, I maintain a relationship with this compassionate and formidable woman, this Queen of Heaven and Empress of Hell. During the summer as a child, I would ride my bike to my childhood church where I spent many hours sitting in the Marian chapel, contemplating what it meant to be a powerful divine woman who was still bound by the constraints of patriarchy. I imagine what wonders Mary could have bestowed if she was allowed to step into her own rightful dominion, unbridled by the fetters placed upon her. I definitely felt a kinship to Mary back then, which maintains to this day. So, with all of that said, I have come to realize that the gender roles we humans perform in our various religions are just that, performances, guising in sacred theater, an intricate and fluid dance of masks and energy and flowing power. In modern paganism, there is a movement to abolish the gender binary that has been so prevalent. What ways can we see beyond the sun is masculine, the moon is feminine? Or how can we transcend the idea that the divinity of a woman resides in their fertility status, while still honoring and preserving the very important roles that crones, sages, and elders hold in our belief system? I don't know about you, but as a non-binary person who was assigned female at birth, I absolutely do not want my status or community role as a pagan to be based on whether I can or have given birth to children. I believe there's room for all gender roles and archetypes in contemporary paganism, and that we can celebrate the entire spectrum of roles that make up a thriving, healthy, spiritual community. I also believe that we as Unitarian Universalists can continue to see beyond the gender binary in our spiritual and mundane lives as we both celebrate our differences and recognize our shared humanity. So as we've seen, throughout time in human history, we have interpretations of the sacred in every gender expression imaginable, whether that be transgender, non-binary, gender fluid, female, or male. And this holy legacy is ours to continue to expand upon.
It's beautiful. Thank you both. Reminds me of, I don't know, do you of you remember like back in the 90s, the band Bare Naked Ladies? Good, like, one of their songs, when I was born, they looked at me and said, what a good boy, what a smart boy. What a strong boy. And when you were born, they looked at you and said, what a good girl, what a pretty girl. We've got these chains hanging around our necks, and people want to strangle us with them before we take our first breath. And the song goes on from there. And having, you know, being the parent of a nine-month-old, I don't want to offend any of you who have asked me this question. I just want to reframe it for Transgender Day of Visibility. That so many people, the first question they ask me when they come up to Jalen is it a boy or is it a girl? And part of me just wants to say, why are you so interested in my baby's genitals? I mean, when you think about it that way, like, why do you need to know, right? So, next Sunday is International Transgender Day of Visibility. It's an annual event dedicated to celebrating transgender people and raising awareness of the discrimination that transgender people face worldwide, as well as a celebration of their contributions to society. In 2021, President Biden became the first president to officially recognize March 31st as Transgender Day of Visibility. You sometimes see it TDOR, is how it's sometimes abbreviated. And he called upon all Americans to join in the fight for full equality for all transgender people. This year, March 31st, also happens to be Easter, and although there are likely some interesting sermons, or maybe there will be some, to preach at that kind of intersection of resurrection and the transgender journey, we're celebrating Transgender Day of Visibility a week early this year. Defending transgender rights feels particularly urgent these days. In the words of the executive director of PFLAG, which is the largest organization dedicated to supporting, educating, and advocating for LGBTQ plus people and their families, hundreds of bills across dozens of states are seeking to harm transgender and non-binary kids and their families. Bills that, if passed, would prevent access to gender-affirming health care, prevent trans kids from joining their friends and playing on sports teams, and deny them access to bathrooms and to locker rooms. Bills that could criminalize parents for making informed, loving, and actually very private decisions. Again, it's back to that, why are you so interested in other people's genitals? Still, other bills are working to prevent even the mention of gender identity or sexual orientation in the classroom. In truth, there is no amount of legislation that can erase the authentic identities and lives of our trans and non-binary loved ones. It can only serve to make trans and non-binary people even more vulnerable to harm as they simply are trying to live their lives. One of the books I've been reading in preparation for Transgender Day of Visibility is titled Before We Were Trans, A New History of Gender by Dr. Kit Haim, who uses both they, them, and he, him pronouns. They are interested in both deepening and widening how transgender history is told. Our modern understanding of the term transgender dates back only to the early 20th century. So that's the whole before we were trans, right? There wasn't no kind of word transgender. So, but we know that countless people throughout history have been what in retrospect we would call today transgender. The basic claim of the transgender experience, as I think Ursa already very well spoke to, seems to me self-evidently true, that we're all somewhere on this wide spectrum of gender. We humans are just a lot messier, more interesting, and more complex than can be contained in a simplistic gender binary of male or female only. In Haim's words, if I played professional sports, my testosterone levels would make me, quote, a man. If I got pregnant, my doctor's computer system would force me to be labeled a woman. If you ask me, I'd tell you neither simplistic category is accurate. Instead, I use the term non-binary to describe myself. My own dress also both reflects and reshapes my gender on a daily or sometimes more than daily basis. This is part of what the philosopher Judith Butler meant when she famously described gender as a performance. More specifically, Haim says, sometimes it's the case that I put on jewelry and a bright fitted cardigan because I'm feeling less male and more non-binary on a particular morning. Other times the reverse is true. Both kinds of gendered experience are equally true for me. My gender isn't less authentic because a pair of dangly earrings can change how it feels. Their book includes a lot of historical examples. Some are, of course, some of the most well-known examples throughout history, such as Billy Tipton, the American jazz musician who lived as a male and whose family and friends were shocked when he was outed as trans after his death in 1989. So it's kind of after high school, had lived so long as a male that even like his children didn't know. James Barry, the Irish surgeon, who similarly lived as a male for all of his adult life and was also outed against his will in 1865. Or Lily Elba, the Danish trans woman who was one of the earliest recipients of a modern form of gender reassignment surgery. Or Christine Jorgensen, who was made famous in 1952 with the New York Daily headline, XGI becomes blonde beauty. These examples and many other prominent transgender stories from history are significant, but let me give you just one provocative example of what does Haim mean by a new history of gender. They are interested in shining a spotlight on previously unrecognized examples of potential transgender ancestors. Let's turn back the clock 177 years to 1847 and hop the pond over to London. Where one night in early June, a 22-year-old named John Sullivan was stumbling drunkenly down a street wearing a bonnet, a gown, a silk apron, a pair of trousers, and a pair of women's boots, and he had a bag with a ton of other women's clothing in it. He claimed it was just all a big joke after getting arrested for wearing women's clothing and blamed his, quote-unquote, women's clothing, and blamed his poor decision-making, making poor decisions while intoxicated. He was put on trial for stealing the clothes and given the outrageous sentence of being sent to the penal colony in Australia for 10 years. Haim challenges us to consider, is this story a story of transgender history? Ultimately, we don't have enough information to know how Sullivan identified. Was it just a drunken lark, or was there something more going on? But I appreciate Haim's interest in reading between the lines and looking for transgender precedents in many different previously unexplored areas. That being said, I didn't want to focus too much on the past and neglect really important transgender folks alive today. To that end, a second book I've been reading in the lead up to International Transgender Day of Visibility is titled Authentic Selves, Celebrating Trans and Non-Binary People and Their Families. It's by Peggy Gillespie and is published by Skinner House Books, which is one of the imprints of our own Unitarian Universalist Association. It's a beautiful collection of interviews, but I'm going to have to limit myself to give you kind of five representative quotes. But if these leave you curious to learn more, I do recommend this book. Beautiful photos, beautiful interviews. In the spirit of Transgender Day of Visibility, these photos and quotes will help you hear more directly from people speaking for themselves about just how life-affirming it has been for them to come out as transgender and how life-negating it was when they were in the closet. First, meet Angèle. She says, I'm actually still transitioning. I'm happier than I could have possibly imagined being in my wildest dreams. Every day I find that I wake up and I'm more myself than ever before. Her mother echoes this sentiment. What a gift it has been to truly get to know my daughter, the real Angèle. Similarly, her brother shares, Angèle has this certain twinkle in her eyes that not all people have. But before she came out as trans, that spark was never in her eyes. Meet Joseph, a physician's associate. He shares, in the 7 years since I came out as a trans man, I've experienced a lifetime of change. I've felt what is called gender euphoria. You often hear people talk about gender dysmorphia, having this feeling of not being a match with their body. Gender euphoria is finally feeling that. My wishes and prayers from 50 years earlier when I was a child were answered by medical science and by perseverance. It's all been worth the wait, the challenges, and the mysteries. Anna is a deputy sheriff. She shares that my county has spent over $1 million fighting my request for trans health care. I can't believe they've been willing to spend that much money when finances was one of the main reasons they made for denying my claim. They've spent so much more defending my case than it would have cost them to just cover my surgery. Sarah McBride was elected in 2020 to the Delaware State Senate, making her the first openly transgender state senator in the country. This year, she is a candidate for Delaware's at-large congressional district. If elected, she would be the first openly transgender member of Congress. In her words, if your child is coming out as trans or non-binary, not only has your child probably been struggling with who they are for a long time, they've kept that knowledge inside for a long time. They just need your love and support. Finally, Ben is a medical student. He shares, I made a conscious effort to be very upfront and open about my gender transition from female to male in medical school, because a lot of trans people in my community say they just haven't been treated very well by the medical system. I wanted to expose the next generation of doctors to what it means to be a trans person and to the fact that we are deserving of respect and just simple good care. In the words of my colleague, the Reverend Dr. Maureen Killoran, whoever you are, wherever you come from, wherever you are on your journey, however you identify, and whomever you love, you're welcome here. And as we sang in our opening hymn, how could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. That's the kind of world with love at the center that we're seeking to build together for ourselves, for our children, and for our children's children. And I'm grateful to be with you on that journey, because so many people are being harmed on the way, and I'm glad that we're doing what we can to be a refuge in the storm. So in the spirit of Transgender Day of Visibility, please rise in body or spirit. Let's sing together hymn 1017, Building a New Way. So as we prepare to go into the rest of this day and into the week to come, and thinking about even, is there something you now have a week in advance on Transgender Day of Visibility? So maybe there's something you would kind of set an intention around, doing to advocate for transgender rights in the next week and beyond. So as we prepare to continue our journey, may you continue your journey with love. Care for one another. Care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And as you go, whatever taste or touch you've had in this time and place of a little more hope or love or peace or joy, a glimpse into what it might look like and feel like to have a more egalitarian and gender-liberated world where anyone can express their gender in any way their hearts desire. If you had a little more of a glimpse of that, that goes with you into the world. We are different for having spent this time together. May you live boldly. May you live with thanksgiving.